Becoming smoke-free is not all plain sailing. There are often traps along the way, perhaps some you haven't thought of yet. What foods may help or hinder? Is exercise important? What should I drink? What do I do during breaks at work? These are important questions. Are you ready for the answers? Stay tuned. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Dr. Nerida, welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Thanks for joining us for the last part of the special series on smoking. Dr. Ferry and I are going to review the steps you need to take and give you some tips for staying on the wagon. Debbie Austin died February 22, 2013. This is her testimony. This is what she lived for.
My name is Debbie Austin, and I started smoking when I was 13. Oh, I started because I wanted to look older. I wanted to be cool. In 1963, when I started smoking, I don't remember ever seeing a place that said no smoking. Doctors smoked in hospitals, patients smoked in hospitals, nurses had cigarettes burning in the hospital park where the babies are. And if you had a quarter in 1963, you could buy a pack of cigarettes. The only thing they said was, who are these for? Come smoking Camel non-filters. Who do you think they're for? Well, the little girl wouldn't smoke those. Here, honey, thank you. People always lie about their first cigarette. Oh, it was great. I fell in love with the taste. You know, your eyes cross, so you fill up your lungs as much as you can. And the next thing you know, you're dizzy. Threw up in the gutter and said, wow, should have taught me something. I think the addiction was so gradual. You start smoking after school so you can be cool with your friends. By the time you get to a pack a day, you're not going to give them up easily. I was smoking a pack a day before I got out of junior high school. This is an addiction. Everybody does a ceremony to smoking from the time you get that pack in your hand. It starts. You pack your cigarettes the way you open them. How we flip our ash. How we hold our cigarette. You have created a ceremony that takes you into a completely different space. This is part of why it's so difficult to quit. I'm sorry. When people want to argue about how hard it is to quit, I ask them how easy it would be to die knowing that you're going to be leaving the people that think you walk on water behind, and then they're going to go to school, and they're going to find out that it was a preventable death.
Stay by, because there's more of Debbie's story in our show today. What a powerful testimony. Now joining us again from Loma Linda University is Dr. Linda Ferry, the originator of the first FDA-approved non-nicotine pharmacological treatment for smoking cessation. It's called Zyban. So let's go to Loma Linda, California for an interview with Dr. Ferry. Come with us. Dr. Ferry, is there a link between nicotine and caffeine? What's the interplay, and should someone stop both at the same time?
So every addictive substance, when you quit, has its own unique withdrawal syndrome. When you quit caffeine, which is addicting, you'll have headaches or upset stomach or blurred vision or just craving for caffeine, irritability, jitteriness. So would you want to add that to the withdrawal symptoms of nicotine dependence, which are actually much more severe? So the research shows it doesn't make much sense to stop abruptly without treatment both of these two chemicals at the same time. Now, one of the interesting things is drinking a cup of coffee and having a cigarette in your hand has this physical association, and you'd think it'd be a great idea, just give up your coffee and give up your cigarette at the same time. In reality, it's probably better if it's your decision to give up both, to go through the withdrawal from each of them sequentially, quit caffeine first, which is the easiest, and actually is with some of the medications that we use, is actually ameliorated a little bit so the withdrawal symptoms aren't so bad. And then once you're through caffeine withdrawal, which will take a few weeks, then switch to going through nicotine withdrawal so that they don't multiply and make you really, really miserable.
What about alcohol and tobacco? Because those often go, you know, the beer and the cigarette. What about that interaction? Yeah.
So remember, there's three sides to a triangle. There's the habit, ritual, and routine, just as you said. You have one in one hand and one in the other. You're used to it. It's comfortable and convenient. The second thing is the chemistry. There is a chemistry between being inebriated, meaning your judgment is clouded in your frontal lobe, if your alcohol levels are too high, and you don't make good decisions about staying quit from your smoking. So there's the association, and then there's the chemistry, and then there's the attitude. I'm here to have a good time. Let's take one down and then smoke. And you get the double hit from the chemistry of nicotine and alcohol or anything else that's addicting and mind-altering that you're using at the time. So our recommendation is, if you are a social drinker, that means you can drink when it's socially appropriate and not drink when it's socially inappropriate. It's inappropriate to drink when you're trying to quit smoking because of the association from all those three areas. So the best success rates are in people who say, I will not drink during this time when I'm quitting smoking, and who don't actually have a more serious problem than they think. Some people say, oh, I can just quit drinking, and then they find they have a craving pattern that they never really saw before because they didn't try and interrupt it. Those people need some alcohol dependence treatment in addition to nicotine dependence treatment. So my recommendation is, if you find that you can't stop drinking, get treatment for that. Find out what you're using alcohol for in your life and deal with that issue, and then decide to put tobacco out of your life if you can't do both together.
Great. So again, you would do that first because you'll just,
if you're dependent,
sabotage your nicotine dealing.
If you're dependent and can't stop drinking, then that's problem drinking, not social drinking.
Right.
And for women, that's one or two drinks in an episode, a party, a setting. For men, it's two to three drinks. And once you go three or more, that's not social drinking anymore.
Diet and exercise, what role do they play? I mean, it's part of a step to better health, isn't it? But how does that help with stopping smoking?
So most people who try and quit smoking many times keep trying the same way that didn't work the previous time, right? So I encourage people to say, what did you not like about the process of quitting smoking? Let's not repeat that. And what worked well for you? So pull out of your toolkit the things that worked well and the things that didn't. Were you exercising? Were you eating five fresh fruits and vegetables every day? Were you working on your stress management? So whatever you were doing that worked, let's use it again. But this time, let's get all the brain chemistry support we can get out of a good regular exercise program. That means 30 minutes a day, 3 to 5 days a week. Then you will feel better, you will get the chemical benefit, you will sleep better, and it will help reduce your nicotine withdrawal symptoms.
So how does the selection of medication and the date of quitting interact?
So when you quit smoking, you should already have decided on a scheme like I use with my patients. What's the medication you're going to use before a quit date? Mm-hmm. What's the medication you're going to use on your quit date? And what are you going to do to rescue yourself when craving hits afterwards? So as we talked about three classes of medicines, the two oral pill medications should be started 2 weeks before you think you're ready to quit, so that the brain chemistry can adjust to the effects of the medications and limit your withdrawal symptoms. Mm. Nicotine replacement, which is just replacing the nicotine from your tobacco, should be started on your quit date. But as you can see on this chart, you should try it before your quit date so you know how to use those tools and it's not like a foreign activity when you're actually quitting. There are some of these that you can combine. You can combine nicotine replacement gum with the patch. You can combine the oral puffer with the gum. So you can combine nicotine to get your net levels up to the point where you're comfortable, and you can also combine nicotine with bupropion. The things that don't match is you can't combine the varenicline with nicotine because they both work at the same receptor in the brain and they compete and cause too many side effects. So the one pill, the varenicline or Chantix medication that's taken in the same way that bupropion is, a lower dose to begin with, a higher dose later, that medication controls withdrawal symptoms well, but you can't combine it with the nicotine replacement when you have an emergency breakthrough craving.
All right. Well, thank you.
Diet and exercise, sleep habits, lifestyle changes. Well, my friends, that was precious information. It was just a little bit of what we have for you today. We have lots to cover still with Dr. Ferry on smoking, and when we come back from the break, we'll have some delicious, healthy popsicles for you. All this and much more to come after the break. Stay tuned.
A movement toward daily scripture reading is underway. It's called Revived by His Word. The plan? To read one chapter of the Bible per day. The goal? To direct the attention of participants to the importance of knowing Jesus through His Word.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. And Phil's in our kitchen. Phil, what are you doing for us today?
I'm very excited. I'm going to share a recipe that has been passed around from my friends.
Yeah.
And I happen to see it every once in a while passed from friend to friend. And this is a recipe that if you're invited to a picnic in the coming summer or spring, you're more than likely to come back because of this recipe, because everybody just loves it and it's extremely healthy.
Really?
Yes.
I'm dying to know. What is it?
We're basically making some of the healthiest and best popsicles that I've ever had.
Seriously, I haven't had a popsicle for so many years. Well, I'm looking forward to this.
Yes. Well, basically,
what goes in it?
We're going to start off with our main ingredient, which is 3 cups of watermelon puree. You're going to dice it, and then we're going to puree it.
Mm.
1/2 cup of fresh blueberries, 1/2 cup of chopped fresh strawberries, a kiwi peeled, a peach or a nectarine diced small, and then fresh cherries pitted and chopped. And the honest truth is, you can take your favorite fruits and put them into this recipe because basically anything will go with it, and it's a great way to get different fruits in.
Well, I can see you already broke the rules because not everything on that list is here, and you've got some extras, so creativity is the theme.
That's exactly right.
Great.
And when you're cooking, just enjoy it. Mm. Get the foods that you really like into it, and especially with this one, especially if you have kids, it's a great way to get their favorite fruits in, and they're just going to get excited.
Right.
As excited as I am.
Yeah, great. Well, show us where to do it.
Well, but first off, we've got our watermelon, and we're going to puree it, and that's going to be our base. So basically, we've taken our chopped watermelon, and And we're going to put it in here.
Okay, we need to get the base out of the blender before.
Now,
okay.
The one thing I want the viewers to know is a lot of times we throw away all the watermelon seeds. Mm. And we're actually throwing away nutrients. You can put them in here, you can blend them, you can put them to the side, but it's a great idea to put them into these popsicles because you can get...
So what's in a watermelon seed?
Well, you've got a few things. You've got protein, you've got phosphorus, you've got iron, you've got several things, magnesium.
Magnesium, potassium.
That's it. You've got a lot of things, and even more than that.
Fascinating. Yeah? So, are you about to press that down?
Yeah, I can wait.
No, go for it. As easy as that.
As simple as that.
Wow.
So we've got this, we're going to set it aside.
You know, watermelon seeds are also good for high blood pressure. They're diuretic, I think we all know that because we, yeah. And then with the potassium and the magnesium, helps to bring the blood pressure down. So some people use them every day to just keep their blood pressure under control.
Oh,
so there's
good.
A little tip for you. Yeah.
And we're going to put them in here.
All right.
So basically, we've got our fruits. You just want to take some fruits and you can choose your favorite ones.
Well,
that
you're
away.
Blueberries. Yum, yum.
Blueberries, I'm going to put several in.
Oh, and I love kiwis. Of course, because I'm a kiwi.
So you are what you eat, basically.
Well, yeah. I think we mastered the art of growing kiwi fruit in New Zealand, so yeah.
And this is basically, you've got your mold.
Do I need to push them down?
It's a good idea. Now, the liquid in this is just going to fill those gaps.
Oh, okay.
So you do want to be a little bit careful when you're pouring it. I don't have a problem with getting messy when I cook. Pour it to the top. You put your sticks in.
And you head to the picnic.
And you're basically done. Now, I will say that there's more to do.
Oh, really?
Well, we've got to freeze it. Because who wants a watery popsicle?
I was going to say, you've got to go to the picnic tomorrow, right?
That's exactly. Because
you've got to put it in the freezer.
These will be in the freezer for about 8 to 10 hours just to fully solidify.
Fabulous.
And lucky for us, we did some of these before.
Oh, look at this.
And they look gorgeous.
Mm. Now, for someone who's quitting smoking, especially if they're handlers, but you're used to having something in your hand, putting it in your mouth. So this is a perfect... healthy alternative. So I would encourage you to really think about making popsicles so that you have something that will replace the handling and the stimulation as well of smoking. Bon appetit.
And it's so refreshing. Mm. It's sweet and it's all good for you.
Mm. Bring on the hot sunny day. Now, let's have a look at another part of Debbie's story. She's so inspiring.
I had my first cancer before I was 21. When they tell you had cancer, you go stupid. And then panic sets in. He said, I'm sending you to a ear, nose, and throat specialist. I went in. Takes a piece of gauze, wraps it around my tongue, sticks this little mirror over a candle, pokes it down my throat and says, well, you have cancer. After this surgery, they kind of wrap you up like a mummy. I'm completely disconnected. So trying to strike a match to light a cigarette, I'm quite sure my neighbors were entertained. I couldn't light at my house because my mom is a non-smoker and so are my sisters. They just smelled it. I mean, the urge to smoke of all things that you can give up. So then I take this big old hit off the cigarette and I just leaned against the wall. It truly was like the first cigarette all over again. I had this big yellow stain. I knew I had to go to the doctor. And he gets his little flashlight down and he picks out four or five flecks of tobacco out of the upper inch or two of my stomach and says, don't let me see this again. People would look at me with their cigarettes and it's like, oh, if I ever get like that, I'd quit. Why do you have to wait till you get like this, fool? Do you think this is a lot of fun? To stick 14 inches of tubing in this little hole in your throat to vacuum out your lungs so you have enough breath to walk into the kitchen. I gave this to the tobacco industry. They didn't take it. I gave it to them. I gave it to them because I never questioned how much I was giving. I didn't get mad or angry about the tobacco industry until after the state of California called me to see if I would do a public service announcement. It was like, oh, gee, let me see. Am I going to stand up in front of an entire state and tell them that I'd lost my voice because I couldn't control my addiction? I don't think so. Until my niece was probably about yay big, maybe 3 or 4. She went in and drew a big black dot on her throat, so when her and I went out to dinner that night, we would look alike. That was when I sat down and realized how much I had sacrificed for the tobacco industry.
Debbie lost her larynx at 42. She continued to smoke for another 4 years. Don't miss the conclusion of her story. It's very moving. All of this and more on today's show. Now let's go back to Loma Linda and continue the interview on smoking cessation with Dr. Ferry.
Dr. Ferry, what are the most common reasons for relapse?
People love to smoke and they miss it when they don't.
Mm.
And they have all sorts of excuses why it's easier to go back to smoking than learn to live without it. Many of those are, this terrible thing happened to me and I needed tobacco to help me cope with it. Mm. Stressful events, traumatic events, a death in the family, a flat tire, my car, you know, had an accident, my dog died. I mean, it doesn't really matter how trivial or serious the stress is. Smokers haven't learned how to live with life's stresses since they were teenagers without nicotine to give that temporary I'm okay feeling. Mm. Another reason is being around a community of smokers, especially if it's combined with alcohol. In my area of the country, people go to casinos. It's a very, very common place to smoke, drink, and gamble. Mm-hmm. Caution goes to the wind. So that's a very common cause of relapse. And another area is withdrawal symptoms. Just not wanting to quit on your own and be tough and not use any crutch like a medication.
Right.
And not use the medication for long enough. So withdrawal symptoms, stress, and situations that make you feel like you need to smoke to be social and to, you know, feel good about yourself.
Mm. What are the best strategies to increase success?
According to the Surgeon General's report that gives advice about helping people stop smoking, number one, think carefully about what you value about a non-smoking life and the price that you're paying for smoking. Go seek information. On the internet, there's a wealth of information. There's a lot of websites people can find if they turn at the end of your program to where can they go to get reliable information. Don't go to the tobacco industry to get information about quitting smoking. They have ways to quit smoking. It's just that their ways never work. Wow. They're very clever. Second, after you've thought through how I'm going to quit, talk to a healthcare professional about what medications would be appropriate for you, because everyone who has tried unsuccessfully and has met roadblocks that have kept them from achieving their goal, they need to sit down with someone and say, how come I can't get beyond that? What should I do to detour around this roadblock? And then they should be honest with themselves. What is it that makes quitting smoking so scary? Because it can be very, very scary for someone who smoked since they were 13 and now they're 60. They don't really know how to live life without tobacco.
Mm. What about medications? How long should you use them? How do you choose which one?
So remember that all medications, whether it's the nicotine patch that you're going to use, whether it's the nicotine gum you just use when you have a craving, or whether it's the oral medications, the varenicline or the oral pill Zyban or bupropion, those medications should be used as long as your brain needs them. Remember, it's to control withdrawal symptoms in the addiction cycle in your brain. Some people will be over it in 6 weeks, the low-risk people. And there's a way to determine, are you low-risk or high-risk? There's several ways in the internet. You can look for the Fagerstrom test of nicotine dependence, and it will give you a scale. There's many ways to do that. So low-risk people might be through with medication in 2 to 6, 10 weeks, and off, tapered off, doing well, their brain no longer craves or has withdrawal symptoms. Mm-hmm. Other people may need to be on medication longer. If you were to say, what's a recommendation time? It would be about 12 weeks, 3 months. Remember, you've smoked for 20, 30, 40 years. What's the problem with staying on medicine a few weeks if it's going to mean a smoke-free life and a much higher success?
Right. That makes a whole lot of sense. What are the other health issues, though, after stopping that last cigarette?
You know, I call it the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good things is, remember, there's lots of good benefits that you need to focus on about quitting smoking, but there are some bad consequences. Mm-hmm. So remember, some people are smoking to control anxiety or mood. So your mood could deteriorate if you've been using nicotine as a chemical agent to fix a mood. The other might be weight gain. And that's kind of the ugly part.
Yeah. Maybe we'll come back to that.
Okay. It's a big issue, especially for women.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The Fagerstrom test is a very powerful tool, and it's available right there on our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. Download it and use it. Share it with whoever you need to and find out what your addiction levels are. Now, when we come back from the break, we'll have a practical demonstration for you. But first, let's take a look at the latest research from Johns Hopkins University, Bloomberg School of Public Health. Welcome to today's medical news report. We're at Johns Hopkins with Dr. Anna Navas. Dr. Navas, cadmium is a contaminant of tobacco. So what effect does that have on the body?
Yes, so this is a very important question, because cadmium is a highly toxic heavy metal that is found in tobacco, but it's also found in other sources such as food and also in air pollution and other in paint. In some of people who do jewelry could be exposed to quite a lot of cadmium.
So
certain occupations are heavily exposed to cadmium. But what we are really concerned is, because it's so such a high potent toxicant, is what are the health effects. And we've known for a long time that cadmium is a carcinogen, and it causes lung cancer and a few other cancers. But what we don't really know is what are the cardiovascular effects of cadmium. So this is a topic that I've been interested for a number of years.
Right, so because we know smokers are at increased risk of cardiovascular disease, so heart attacks, strokes.
Yes, and part of that relationship could be due to cadmium.
And then also blood vessels in the feet, so amputations are common amongst diabetics who smoke. So what did your paper discover?
Yes, so in this paper what we really wanted to answer is if cadmium is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. So is it related to heart attacks? Is it related to stroke? Is it related to chronic heart failure? And so we look at the population exposed to different levels of cadmium, and we follow them for a number of years. So they were recruited in the late 80s, and they were followed for 20 years until the end of the 2008. And so during those 20 years, we saw that people with higher urine cadmium levels, and urine cadmium is an excellent biomarker of long-term chronic cumulative exposure to cadmium. And so those people with higher urine cadmium levels had a higher risk of developing a cardiovascular disease, both mortality and incidence. That means both fatal and the non-fatal events, such as having a heart attack, going to the hospital with a heart attack. And you can see that there is an increased risk of coronary heart disease, stroke, and heart failure. So this really gives us very definitive evidence that cadmium is a cardiovascular disease risk factor and that we need to implement measures in the population to prevent exposure to cadmium.
Mm. So someone who has cardiovascular disease, it's so important that they stop smoking.
Absolutely. Stopping smoking is going to reduce your cadmium levels almost immediately. It's also going to reduce other toxicants in tobacco. So definitely quitting smoking, it's the best way to protect your heart that you can do. Especially, I would say, if you are in your 20s, 30s, please stop smoking, because that's going to really benefit your health very, very quickly, and soon you'll have a lower risk of all these health effects related to smoking. You'll be almost as a non-smoker. If you continue smoking, then your risk continues to increase as you age.
And it's never too late to stop, is it?
Never too late. Everybody can benefit from quitting smoking.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Now, if you have done the Why I Smoke test, you'll have found that there are six possible reasons that keep you attached to your cigarettes. Stimulation, handling, pleasure, relaxation, craving, and habit. So it's important that you find an alternative to find those same things. Now, if stimulation was your thing, you know that there's dopamine and norepinephrine that gets released when that nicotine hits your brain. So what you need to do is find alternative ways to stimulate your brain and your body. A great way to do that is exercise. And I would encourage all smokers to start doing some exercise. You want to check with your physician before you go on an exercise program, but then start slowly and build up. So exercise is a great way to get that stimulation. You might also want to have a hot mint after your meals. That's a nice stimulating thing. You can also make peppermint toothpicks, but mint is a great way to just get your mouth really fresh. Toothbrush is another great way, or mouthwash. Carrot sticks, they're all ways to kind of wake you up and get you going, rather than having a cigarette. Now, as I mentioned, handling is another thing. So if you're a handler, then toothpicks can be your friend. Instead of taking your cigarette and putting it in your mouth, you can take your toothpick and put it in your mouth. And you know, I know someone, he swears he must have used a whole tree of toothpicks when he quit smoking, for the next 10 years, actually. So don't be afraid to keep using these toys, as you might call them. Another great one, very popular one, is a rubber band. You can use a rubber band just to fiddle with. You might be on the phone, you might be watching TV, but as you use it, you're just keeping your hands busy, and you might even wear it then around your wrist. Nuts in a shell are another great way to handle, but remember, nuts are high in calories, but that's a great way to keep handling. Another important way is to use a squeeze ball. You know, a lot of people also get relaxation from smoking, and a squeeze ball is good at relaxing you as well. So keep one of those handy if it works for you. A paperclip or a pen, you have lots of those in the office, so remember those. Now, it's very easy as a handler to think that maybe a lollipop would be a good way to get some hand-mouth stimulation, but It's got calories, it's going to eat your teeth. Often your dentition has been damaged by smoking. So it's not the best way to handle. The other thing about sweets is they are acidic, as are all of these drinks. These sodas, fruit juices, coffee, they're all acidic, and acidic foods and drinks are going to drive your appetite for cigarettes. So stay away from them. It's quite important. What can you drink instead? Well, water. And the other thing about water in a bottle is it's great for handlers because you've got something to play with. Another good drink, there are some herbs that can help with the cravings. And if craving is one of your thing, lobelia tea has been found to be helpful. This is licorice tea. That's another herb that is a relaxer, as is peppermint. So think about combining a few of those herbs together, but lobelia is the one that's been tried and true. Another thing about smoking is it's pleasurable. So find something else you enjoy and do that. It might be a hobby. Perhaps you enjoy embroidery. You might want to take up embroidery, knitting, crochet. I know that's not going to deal with things for the men, but men, you might have some hobbies that you want to get into. A lot of people who quit find they have so much more time and they start reading or doing something else that they can do with their time that they used to just spend smoking. It's quite amazing. Now, you'll have noticed that I've got lots of fruit and some veggies here. So you might be saying, well, what should I eat and drink once I stop smoking? You know, the smoking has been robbing you of some of your vitamins, your minerals. So what you want to do is load up on fruits and vegetables. We know that you're more at risk of putting weight on when you quit. These are low-calorie, high-fiber foods. So what that means is you'll avoid putting on weight while having lots of fiber and feeling full. And that's going to really help encourage you with the new change that you're making in your life. So remember your fruits and vegetables and, of course, whole grains. Try to throw away all the white pasta and the white rice and the white bread and move to whole wheat or whole grain alternatives. Well, I hope that these things have been helpful for you. Try to put them into practice. Try to do that why I smoke test and work out what's going to work for you. We're all different. Now let's look at another ageless advantage.
Nuts, like almonds and peanuts, are full of healthy antioxidants. But not every almond or peanut on the supermarket shelf has the same antioxidant punch. Most of the nuts' antioxidants are found in their outer soft covering. When this is damaged through peeling or blanching, half or more of the antioxidants are lost. Choose raw almonds over blanched and enjoy your peanuts with the brown papery covering intact. Choosing nuts in their natural state is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. Now I'm going to answer some questions that you've texted, called, and posted on our Facebook page. Velda posted on Facebook, what is your take on the need for calcium supplements post-menopause? Great question, Velda. While we're there, I'll just mention that for men, there's some evidence that supplementation is not a good idea. But they need to be sure that they're getting adequate dietary calcium because they can still get osteoporosis. So let's switch to women. The studies are not consistent. Some say that taking over 1,000 milligrams increases the risk of cardiovascular disease for women. Others say that it doesn't. So right now, it's difficult to be sure. What we do know is that vegetarians and especially vegans can be deficient in calcium and have more bone fractures. So a middle road may be to take 500 milligrams a day if you're vegetarian or vegan. Another caller asked, what causes alopecia and can it be corrected? Well, for those of you that don't know, alopecia is hair loss. It can be due to a mineral deficiency, so be sure that you're getting lots of whole grain cereals, grains. Also, if you have hypothyroidism, you can lose hair. But the commonest cause, we don't know. The next commonest is stress. So really focus on getting your stress levels down. And if you do have a lot of stress, think about B vitamins and magnesium. Betty called, I don't have a pancreas and I have multiple very small meals. I was wondering what foods or fruits I should eat so that my stomach will digest my food better. Thank you. Well, Betty, that's a very unusual problem. But what you should have is digestive enzymes and pancrease or lipase. You'd need to see your doctor for those things. Also, just remember to do everything you can to support your digestive tract. So have a gap of at least 4 to 5 hours between your meals. Chew very well. Eat slowly. And just eat foods that are going to be easy on the stomach. Don't have heavy meals at night, for example. Don't eat a lot of fat in one meal. I hope that helps you. And all the best. That's a really challenging problem. Another caller asked, what causes diabetes besides carbohydrates? Well, the simple answer is fats. What the experiments that they've done on young, healthy, fit men, they've given them a high-fat diet. Within 2 weeks, they get diabetes. So fat is very important. Thanks for sending those questions. They were great. Call us with your health question now. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. And remember, you can text us or post your questions on Facebook. Before we continue our interview on smoking cessation with Dr. Ferry in Loma Linda, let's take a look at this Bon Appetit. Bananas are the world's largest herb and they're grown mainly in the tropical areas. Where sweet yellow bananas such as these are grown and they can be eaten raw, or there are plantain bananas which are high in starch and they require cooking. Fruit bananas such as these turn yellow as they ripen and you want to look for the little black spots so that you know that the starch is turning into sugar. Remember though, one medium banana is one serving and it contains over 100 calories. It's very easy to eat too many bananas, especially if you have diabetes. They contain though 400 milligrams of potassium and 3 grams of fiber along with some magnesium. Add a banana to your breakfast cereal or try cooking some plantain bananas. Get more potassium into your diet for good cardiovascular health. Bon appetit. Dr. Ferry, we're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly when we quit. And we got up to the ugly. Tell us about the weight gain story.
Yeah. So the reality is, when you quit smoking, you are losing the advantage that a smoker has of not feeling hungry, of having their metabolic syndrome being revved up all the time with nicotine.
Their metabolic rate, yep.
The metabolic rate, norepinephrine is a great stimulant to not make you hungry and to make you feel more alert and to make your heart rate increase. Lots of things go on with your physiology. As a consequence to that, when you stop nicotine's effect in your brain, you reverse all of that and you get hungry and your metabolic rate slumps and you don't have much energy and you gain weight even if you don't change how much you eat. So that disproportionately affects women compared to men. Women gain more weight and have more premenstrual syndrome. That's also one of the ugly parts of quitting smoking. A woman who's menstruating needs to time her quit date very carefully if she has PMS symptoms, because her nicotine withdrawal symptom will be much worse during that period of time.
Wow. So time it to fall very early in that month?
Very early after your menstrual cycle, before all of the hormones trying to get you prepared for pregnancy, which is what causes PMS, take control of your physiology and your brain and moods and emotion. And there's actually a book written to help women deal with that.
Really? Which book is it?
It's called Life After Cigarettes, and it was written by a colleague of mine at the University of Michigan, and it says why women smoke, how to help them quit, look good, and feel great and manage their weight. So I would encourage women who have that as their roadblock. I can't quit smoking if I'm going to have to get rid of my wardrobe and gain 3 dress sizes Because last time I gained 15 or 30 pounds and it took a long time to get it off. Mm. Well, don't let the ugly side of quitting smoking sabotage all the benefits. Right. So I would encourage them to look. There's several books out there to help. I actually wrote one many years before my colleague did about how to quit smoking and not gain weight. And half of it's a cookbook and half of it's a description of how to quit smoking.
Well, that sounds very practical.
And the reality is that smokers often are not very careful with their diet either. Mm. They know they're taking so many risks by their smoking, they really don't care if they're eating fried foods and high oxidative meats and chemicals and dairy products and not getting their fresh fruits and vegetables and their fiber in. So this book goes back to how to get the minerals reestablished, the nutrients, the vitamins, and the fiber back into your diet. And you can find that information on the internet to order that book.
Excellent. Now, what social support and environmental changes lead to long-term smoke-free families?
So one of the problems is when one family member, one parent, wants to continue smoking and one wants to quit. That's a real tough thing in a home.
That is a tough one.
Because you have to decide, are we going to smoke inside the home or is the smoker going to go outside? How is that going to affect other family members who live there? Maybe perhaps elderly or children who don't really have much of a choice about this. So that social support of coming to terms on a friendly basis of saying, I'm doing this for my health. Can you support me? So it's not telling someone else what to do, but the doctor tells me for my own health, for my asthma, for my cholesterol level, for my heart disease, for my bronchitis, I need to quit smoking. Will you support me by making these changes, making our home smoke-free and smoking outside? Or when you smoke, I'm going to need to leave because it's such a temptation for me. It's not a rejection of you. It's my problem. It's my temptation. There'll be a point in time where it won't tempt me anymore, but for right now, let me do what I need to do. So negotiating your space and your time and all the emotions, because two partners who used to smoke, one of them's going to feel very abandoned when they're the last one because they know the pressure is on to follow suit, right? And they aren't quite ready, or they are more addicted, or they have other barriers, roadblocks that keep them from feeling like the timing is right.
What about dealing with stress? Because smoking is often seen as the stress reliever.
Right. So I hear all the time, Dr. Ferry, this is not the right time for me to quit.
Right.
There's so many stressful things going on. My mortgage, I'm losing my home, I lost my job, my mother died. Right? You can, all of us can come up with a long list. It's just that smokers, that's why they protect their little addiction, because they only know how to handle stress by falsely masking it when they smoke.
Right.
They get a temporary band-aid over a wound that's bleeding and oozing, and they just cover it over with the band-aid of smoking. And they won't just take the band-aid away and let this problem be acknowledged and let it heal, right? So they keep covering it up. So their stress actually mounts over time because they aren't really fixing any of the problems. They're masking it. So I encourage people who say, oh, this is not a good time to quit. You know, there are small segments of people's life when life is at crisis. At crisis level, you should not make any major changes in your life. But when you aren't at crisis level, saying life is too stressful to quit really is a cop-out on an addict's part because they're creating stress by their everyday highs of their addiction and lows of withdrawal. That's very stressful on the human brain to go in and out of that every night when they go to bed for 8 hours and they wake up in withdrawal.
That sounds far more stressful. Thank you. What great advice. When we come back, we'll review all the steps needed to stop smoking. We still have lots to cover on today's show with Dr. Ferry. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I know I'm looking for something. But what? Peace? Purpose? Meaning? I'm still not sure. But I know it's going to take faith.
Remember to call us with your health questions on 855 400 Healthy. Now, before we head back to Loma Linda, take a look at the end of Debbie's story.
That is when I decided, you know, back at lunch, we're going to brawl. This will be a street fight. So I called the state of California back. I said, if you're still interested in me, you know, tell me where to be. Being a tobacco educator is the one thing that you can give back. Literally help someone change their life. And I can't imagine anything that would be more enjoyable or more rewarding than that. It doesn't matter what I know about tobacco. I care about you making a decision based on education instead of desperation. That first cigarette is a desperate need to belong. That last cigarette is, oh my God, this is my life. This is me. I can't contribute to people's lives through art. However, what is the measure of a work of art? It's creating something that moves the most emotion for the most people that see it. This has allowed me to be an artist. Health-wise today, I have emphysema. I have stomach cancer. You know, my doctor's pretty good to cut the pace mode. He's kept me alive this long. I told him I gotta talk to a million kids, so you gotta keep me badged up till I'm done. When you go out into the world and find your adventure, dance, choose life, be remembered for the content of your art and the choices you made. Do not be remembered for the consequences of the choices you made.
Thanks, Debbie, for such a brave testimony. I hope many will learn from your wise comments. Now let's go to Loma Linda in California and see the final piece of advice Dr. Ferry has for us.
So Dr. Ferry, let's review the steps for someone who's quitting smoking.
First one is to find your reasons, find your passion, and make sure this is a decision you're making for yourself. And then identify, how addicted was I? What are the real reasons that I smoke? Spend some time learning about addictions openly, being willing and open and honest about what the price you've paid for tobacco, and looking forward to, what am I looking forward to achieving? Now remember, some smokers who've smoked for a long time don't know what to look forward to. It's all very scary. Just admit it. Just be honest. This is really scary for me to learn how to live without tobacco. And then get the support that you need. Go talk to a healthcare professional. Think about a quit date. Time the use of your medications to, some of it you need to start a few weeks or a month before your quit date. Some you just need to experiment with the week of your quit date. And then reward yourself every 24 hours that you don't smoke with something that's personally meaningful to you. And every time that craving hits that says, oh man, what are you doing? You need a cigarette to cope with this. You have a statement that you say over and over again that's powerful and meaningful to you that you can use. Get rid of tobacco in your home. Get rid of tobacco in your car. Start practicing in enlarging places in your life where you don't smoke so that it feels comfortable and you can ease into that. And then tell the important people in your life, this is the day. Throw a barbecue, have a party, call your best friends, celebrate in some way so that it's not a funeral, it's actually a celebration. And then move on just one day at a time. You don't have to quit forever. You just, in this moment, right now, I'm not smoking in this moment. You know, if you live in that moment, kind of a mindful approach to, I don't have to smoke. No one can make me smoke right now in this moment. You know, you won't be smoking at all if you live in that mindset.
What about for someone who they've been smoke-free for some days and they just go and pick up a cigarette? Is it all over?
No, it's not all over. That's called a slip. So if you have one cigarette or one drag off someone else's cigarette, or you go to a party and you get so tempted and you think, oh, I can have just one, sometimes leads to two or three, but that's a slip. That doesn't need to stop the whole process. What you will have done is you will have kicked in some brain chemistry that you're going to have to say, hey, I have the skills to deal with that.
Right.
But if you start smoking every day afterwards, or if you go back to the amount you were before, that's actually a relapse. The most important thing to do is to be honest about what you're doing with the people around you. Don't hide it. Hiding is what addicts do.
Right.
Dishonesty is what addicts do. Mm. So be open and say, man, did I blow it again? Okay, where do I start over? And go back to the basics. Mm. Don't have cigarettes and lighters around you. Clean up your space. Don't be honest and get a mentor, a sponsor like they would have in Nicotine Anonymous. Start going to Nicotine Anonymous meetings. Find someone who's really going to hold you accountable and get back on track and start using your medicine and maybe go to a support group or get online. There's lots of support groups online. You can find lots of people in cyberspace who suddenly care about you even if no one in your immediate life does.
How important is it to remember what tripped you up?
Well, if you were a football coach, wouldn't you want to know what went wrong with your last play?
Yeah.
You'd study it with the videos and your team. So it's the same thing with this. This is much more important than a football game. This is life or death. So look for what those roadblocks were in the road and why you couldn't get by them. And be honest. Again, honesty is the issue. I don't want to gain weight. That's really the problem. Mm. Well, then focus on that. I'm afraid I got really depressed. I was crying all the time. I didn't understand what was going on with my moods. Go get some help with that. Don't use that as a reason to stay quit. And those principles that we've just talked about are covered in this book. It's a very quick read, 16 pages, that goes through all the things I've just described. How addicted am I? There's little quizzes that you can take. There's descriptions of the three sides of the triangle. There's dealing with the weight gain issues. There's medication, chemistry, and that book can be purchased online.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show today, for giving us all these great tools. We really appreciate it so much.
I just hope many of your listeners realize they can make a difference in their life or in someone they care for.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We hope and pray that this series has made a difference in your life. Our earnest desire is for you to be free. Take Dr. Ferry's advice. Find the resources on our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. Begin to put plans in place. Trust in God, and we'll be praying that very soon you are going to be smoke-free. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.